The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. If that was enough, take a look at this for a lineup with us as well. Julien Laurent, Frank Leboeuf and Luis Garcia. We kick things off with Kylian Mbappe. Of course, we spent a lot of time during the summer talking about the transfer saga surrounding the French international. He spoke about it for the first time this week, saying, "I asked to leave because at the moment that I did not want to extend my contract, I wanted the club to have a transfer fee to get a replacement of quality. PSG is a club that has brought me a lot. I've always been happy the 4 years I've spent here, and I still am. I wanted everyone to come out of this stronger, that we leave hand in hand to make a good deal, and I respect that. People have said that I refuse 6 or 7 offers of extension, that I do not want to talk to sporting director Leonardo. This is absolutely not true. They told me, Kylian, now you talk with the president. Personally, I did not appreciate. They said I asked to leave the last week of August. I said at the end of July that I wanted to go. It's scary when your president says Kylian will never leave for free. When I heard that, I swallowed hard and I said to myself, but what's going to happen now? Well, a lot to pick apart there. Jules, I just want to start with the fact that obviously...
Hey, say goodbye then.
Goodbye to who?
Oh, I thought that's the end of the programme now, isn't it?
What, because it's such a long... No, I tell you what.
That was a long-winded...
I know, we looked at that quote and I was trying to get it kind of diluted, but I needed it. I needed all that information there, really.
I think...
To kick off the show.
I honestly thought you could have paraphrased that a little bit.
Well, the paraphrasing is, I asked to leave in July, they wouldn't let me and I'm still a PSG player. Let's go with that, right. Shall we, Jules? Which kind of goes against the narrative that maybe we were talking about Lionel Messi coming in and stealing his thunder, and that's why he wanted to leave, because according to him, Jules, he wanted to leave a long time before Messi even appeared.
Yes, that's right, Dan. And in a way, it's what we've been saying all summer. The fact that he would have been happy to stay if the club didn't want to sell, that he would have been very happy to go and that he wanted to go because he doesn't want to leave on a free in a few months' time now, next summer, when his contract would run out in Paris. And now we know for sure because that's what he said. And we were told about it before as well, that he's not going to extend his contract, even if the club is still hoping that they might convince him to stay just for a bit longer in Paris. We know now that this is not going to happen. And you can understand why, in a way, he said to the club, listen, let me go now, and you get the 150, 180, 200 million, whatever Real Madrid are ready to pay. The club said no, they closed the door, and he stayed, and he's happy to stay. But I think it was good for him to finally talk about it. There's also an interview coming in tomorrow in L'Equipe newspaper in France, that he did pretty much at the same time as that interview on RMC radio. So it's clearly now his media plan, if you want, to come out and talk about everything that happened this summer.
Well, maybe Jules can clear some of this up that I'm going to point here. Are you trying to tell me that Messi came in around the 10th or 11th of August, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe.
Yep.
Are you trying to... Now, that move would have been in the works for more than a couple of weeks. So he would have started to get wind of this Messi move to PSG at the end of July, when roughly he told PSG he wanted to leave, right? And if he's trying to say, I gave PSG all the time they needed to go out and replace me, well, listen, France got knocked out of the Euros on the 28th of June.
Right.
Why didn't he tell them on the 1st of July? Why didn't he give them an extra month? The French season kicked off on August 6th. PSG's season kicked off on August 7th. They gave them a week or so now of pre-season to go and make some transfer moves. Yes, the transfer window remained open, but it was a week or 10 days before the season started, according to his timeline. But my point is, what changed between June 28th, going out of the Euros, end of June, in the end of July.
Wait, a little holiday. Little think about it. Yeah, what am I going to do with myself?
He got wind that Lionel Messi was coming in.
Messi happened really quickly, didn't he?
These things just happen in a couple of days.
No, but Messi is an anomaly in that sense because everyone thought he was going to stay at Barcelona. He didn't. And then PSG went, come here.
He would have known that they were making moves to try and get the Messi deal done. I'm not suggesting it was anywhere near done at the end of July, but what I'm saying is that was in the pipeline for quite a while. The whole point is, what happened in that month in between France going out of the Euros and Kylian Mbappe deciding, that'd be nice if they could get a transfer fee for me now. Maybe it was the fact he realised they were chasing Messi and a deal might be possible.
Jules?
So the Messi thing, though, because, like Dan said, everybody thought he was going to stay, including Neymar, including Pochettino, including everyone at the club, really, Mbappe too. Maybe the delay is because he went on holidays, and during that time in Greece, in the south of France, all of that, he didn't speak to anyone, he had no phones. What I'm more interested to know, Craig, is what happened between the end of July when he said, hey, I'm going to leave, I want to leave. What are Real Madrid doing all that time? They leave it to the last week of August to make a first offer to PSG. In that case, at the end of July, Mbappe said, I want to go to Real Madrid. Real Madrid come in and say, okay, we give you 150 million, 160, 180 million. Then maybe PSG do the deal then. They're never going to do the deal with 5 days to go in the transfer window. So what did Real Madrid do all that time? Because when we were asking PSG through August, hey, what's happening with Kylian? They kept saying, well, we've got no offers on the table. We're not going to sell it to a ghost. No one is bidding for him. No one is putting money on the table for him. Who do you want us to sell to? Which is a fair point. Mbappe can say whatever he wants in July. Oh, yeah, I want to leave. Okay, where? To who? Who is giving the money? No one. What did Real Madrid do all that time? Once he said to PSG, I want to go to Real Madrid, what was Florentino Perez doing all that time? Why did he make that first offer so late then? Knowing that Mbappe told PSG at the end of July that he wanted to go and join Real Madrid. And that's where the problem was for Real Madrid then. And I don't know what happened and why they took so long to make that first offer.
To answer your question, what happened to Real Madrid was Florentino Perez, because he was still sniffing about, talking garbage about Super League and whatnot.
And say we got no money.
The bottom line here is, look, we can butter all this up. You know, maybe he should have told him a month before. Maybe he should have did this. Maybe he should have did that. Might have been Cosi Messi coming in and his ego was a little hurt and he thought it might happen. Whatever the case, he's leaving for free.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. And people have to get used to that. And I'm sure PSG will survive and somebody's going to get a heck of a good player who has, without doubt, got an ego that has to be massaged.
Speaking of egos, we know Frank Leboeuf is a big fan of Kylian Mbappe after getting that selfie with him and hanging out with him. Frank, what do you make of this? This is kind of a PR campaign from Mbappe to say, look, I didn't want to leave just because Messi came. This is something I was thinking about before.
Well, he tries to explain, you know, what really happened, and we are still speculating about it, because is he saying the truth? Will we know one day what really happened? But I want to believe what he says is true, and if it's the case, I think his way of going out of Paris Saint-Germain was pretty classy, because he offered to the club to get something where he knew that he could go for free a year after. So let's say at the end of the day that everybody's happy. He stays at Paris Saint-Germain. Paris Saint-Germain have him. And the fans of Kylian Mbappe, therefore myself, are very happy to see him staying at the Paris Saint-Germain. And Real Madrid will, I guess, have him next season. And everything will be for the best. So I don't think we know all the truth. There are some point that he made, like saying that Paris Saint-Germain made 7 offers to him, that was untrue, and some other points. But let's say that at the end of the day, they kept him, Paris Saint-Germain kept Mbappe, and it's a very good thing.
This is another Bruno Fernandes situation, isn't it, really?
Where are we going with this?
Statements.
How do we get into Manchester United?
Interviews, statements, trying to appease, feel the need
No, but I suppose, look,
let me try and find a way that we can still love me.
And you and others came in, go, oh, Mbappe, nice young kid, coming up through. Clearly, though, he's changed. He's had his head turned by fame. He has Messi coming in, he's taken all the spotlight now. And now he wants to leave. You can understand, if I'm Mbappe, I'm coming out and saying, wait a minute, everyone's talking nonsense here. I want to leave way before Messi came in. This is what he's doing. He's just trying to protect his image, isn't he? But you can't deny him that fact.
No, I'm not denying him. He can do it if he wants. All I'm saying is, why feel the need? You know, if they're going to get beat by teams like Rennes every week, then they're all going to get booed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like this culture of I need to make sure I'm explained. I need to make sure that they don't think I'm in the wrong. I need to make sure that you know they're not going to be blaming me. Just go out and play, and whatever happens, happens. I just feel there's this need now to come out and tell everybody.
Right.
It's good for us. We've got something to talk about today.
But there you go.
But, you know, at the end of the day, look, you play, you have success, the crowd accept it or they don't, and you move on.
Luis, it's late in Spain. I know. Hopefully you're still with us. The front page of Marca, front page of AS. Everybody leading with this story in Madrid, given the excitement of Kylian Mbappe. And of course, this story just adds fuel to that.
Yeah, Dan, let me say something before, because I think something is happening on the timeline. We are seeing a little bit just the small picture of the whole history. First thing is that Mbappe wants to play for Real Madrid. Second thing is Real Madrid wants to have Mbappe. The other thing is Real Madrid doesn't have enough money at the moment because of the pandemic situation, because of the build-up of the new stadium. And they cannot pay at the moment what Mbappe or what Paris Saint-Germain wants for Mbappe. The other side is that Florentino needs to give something to the supporters because they are not signing players. There's a team who needs to win the trophies for next year, La Liga, because they didn't arrive last year, the Champions League, so needs to give something. That's why I think, guys, what you were mentioning about why waiting, what was doing Florentino waiting for the last year, 5 days. Because like this, give something to the supporters. Listen, we try, and of course, Paris Saint-Germain is not going to tell you, yeah, we're going to sell him for 120 million at the moment, and we don't have time to buy another one. But Florentino gave that to the supporters. In the other side, Mbappe with his manager, of course, and together with Real Madrid, they are planning like, listen, we are going to do it like this. Not at the moment. We are going to make it like this. Next year, you come here, you get your money, you play for Real Madrid. That's what you want. We want you here. And Paris Saint-Germain is out of the equation. So let's do it like this. My question is, why now? Why is now talking about, no, listen, what happened a couple months ago, and now I want to say in the middle of the season, just before January or the market in January, why he wants to talk now at the moment about the situation 2 months ago. I'm focusing. I'm going to be here for Paris Saint-Germain. I'm going to do my best. And that's the way that I clean my image. That's the way that I show that I support Paris Saint-Germain. If someone wants me, you know, they know that they have to go to talk to Paris Saint-Germain. If not, let's wait until the summer transfer and see what happens. But I don't understand why he's making this statement now, right now. Why? I don't understand it.
Can he play centre half?
Can he play? Well, this is an issue.
Can he play in a back three in between Militao and Nacho? That might help Real Madrid. Short term, anyway. I don't know.
Jules, obviously, after your excitement, Lionel Messi scoring his first goal for PSG against Manchester City midweek, it was very much back to earth with a bang, wasn't it, this weekend? PSG losing against Rennes. You had Mbappe, Neymar, yes, Messi, Di Maria, all starting, not a single shot on target.
No, you're right, Dan. I was going to list as well that front four, and maybe that was part of the problem. We saw them in 4-3-3 against City being far more balanced and better defensively, especially down the wings, covering the fullbacks than they were against Rennes, where they were very exposed. Hakimi on one side, Nuno Mendes on the other side. And that front four, not really defending. I mean, Neymar had a shocker. Mbappe missed some chances. Messi hit the crossbar in the first half. They had a good spell in that first half, PSG, but then I felt like gave up too quickly. Rennes scored right at the end of the first half, right at the beginning of the second half, and that almost killed the game. And it was a really bad day at the office for PSG, one that you can't really reproduce and repeat further down in the season. So I think it was a good warning, and let's hope that they learn from it. But that was bad, especially after the highs, like you said, of Messi's goal and the win against City in the Champions League and all of that in midweek.
Can you imagine if they don't win Ligue 1?
Oh, they'll win Ligue 1. That's fine. They were perfect going into this.
No, I know that.
They're going to win it, but the problem is obviously Champions League. And
well, I know that, but I'm just suggesting. Can you imagine after Lille winning it last year and then bringing Messi in and all the razzmatazz and they don't win it this year and get pumped out of the champ? I'm not hoping for this,
no,
by the way.
No, but I like saying, razzmatazz. That's a nice word. I haven't heard that for a while. For more razzmatazz and reaction as to what happened this weekend, I don't know what he's wearing. Be sure to check out the edition of the Garbage Jewels podcast. Nadim is their special guest.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It was an exciting weekend, wasn't it, in the Premier League. We saw Manchester City drawing at Anfield by 2-2. Meanwhile, Manchester United drew against Everton as well. Shaka Hislop joins the conversation. Frank and Luis with us. Craig's still with us as well. Craig, am I stretching things if I'm saying now after seven matches it's a three-horse race?
I think yes at the moment, because I'm going to give Solskjaer and United a little bit of a minute bit of breathing space. But boy, it has to be a whole lot better. The three teams above them, and we talked about it yesterday on this show, the three teams above them have three quality coaches who don't always get it right, but have done in the past. There is a clear pathway in which their teams play. Sometimes it has to be adjusted, but there is a clear pathway, there's a clear pattern, there's a clear understanding from the players what is expected from each manager, and all a bit different. United are a bunch of cobbled together stars.
Yep.
A lot of them are stars, but they look as if they're sort of cobbled together and some sort of, you know, throw the balls in, kind of see where they land, kind of way. There's no clear pattern to play. And also, even though they're still up there at the moment with 14 points, the other three have all played each other. You know, Chelsea have played the other two. They've all played each other.
Yep.
And they're still above Man United. So they have had, you know, games against the Newcastle, the Southampton. Yeah, they had West Ham, who are decent. They had Everton, who've had a half-decent start. But really, they've played teams, Leeds United, who they would expect to be taking maximum points. They haven't, and they've still got to play the big boys. Solskjaer is not quite hanging on, but he's running games coming up. He could well be if he doesn't get it sorted.
Shaka, obviously, a lot of new faces brought in the summer. Jadon Sancho, Cristiano Ronaldo, Varane as well. Is it just a case of giving these players time to gel and to work together? Or are we seeing problems exposed that Solskjaer isn't able to deal with?
Well, we felt that Solskjaer had that blind spot for quite some time. Just doesn't have the experience, doesn't have the know-how. And while those new signings may buy you some time in terms of them gelling, it adds a whole lot more pressure on the expectation. No one will accept what you heard from Solskjaer back in, what was it, around February, March time, about we're not really judged on winning silverware, it's all about progress. That's not an escape clause anymore for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So it's a matter of balancing all that talent in a way that delivers silverware. And Craig's right. Right now, you look at the top four clubs in the league, and the one department that Manchester United are lacking and trailing behind everybody else in is managerially, and that may cost them.
What's striking, Frank, compared to the Manchester United that you faced, of course, back in the day, is that you feel that still, despite all these big signings and despite all the stars that are on the pitch, every opposition going into a tie against United feel that they've got a fighter's chance.
Yes, there's many aspects that I can talk about, you know, comparing my generation that I played against and this generation. Yes, of course, the coaching, the managing, when you compare Sir Alex Ferguson to anybody else, I don't know if you can do that. Defensively, they were very, very strong at the time, where you can find them pretty fragile still. Manchester United was a club with a formation, an academy, where you knew that young players will come in and will absolutely identify the game that the Sir Alex Ferguson wanted them to play on. Where, in fact, you see, as Craig mentioned, big players, strong players, very good talented player, but in fact, who don't play together. That's the comparison between them and the three other teams, where you feel that there is an identity of each team that we are the first three in the table, and the fourth one who just count on the abilities of the players, and that's not enough in the Premier League. You have to have an identity of game, you have to have an identity of the way you want to play, and that's not the case for Manchester United right now.
Now, I know they did lose to Aston Villa previously, but when you try to put a run together, and I know you want to rest and rotate, but Ronaldo's bailing you out. Mm-hmm. You've got to play him.
Yeah.
Pogba, if you're a fan or not, you've got to play him. You've got to try and get these results, then take them off. The other thing that I brought up before on the show, and I'm not apologising for repeating myself, if you look at the other teams, what will stop City winning the league? We've talked about it. The reason might be
No striker.
What will stop Liverpool? Maybe heavily reliant on Salah and that defence with Van Dijk coming back out after almost a year out. What will stop City? Well, is there back up to Lukaku?
Chelsea.
Chelsea, back up to Lukaku. Is Werner going to step up? Is Havertz going to step up? Can they rely solely on Romelu Lukaku to do it for a whole season on his own? These are the questions. None of these questions are about the manager. Nobody's saying, can any of these clubs win it with this manager? But almost everybody is saying, well, Man United have got a really good squad, maybe not quite as good as one or two of the others, but a really good squad, but have they got the manager?
Yeah.
And that's the question that a lot of people are asking, and they're asking it for a reason, because he's not in that job with resume. He's in it because he's a former player. Now, he's done okay, but Man United are not about being okay. They're about being at the top of the tree, and at the moment, with this run of games coming up, if the results go against them, they could be off the pace. But I'm going to tell you my crystal ball with what I think will happen.
Go on, Craig.
He's the type of manager to me that just gets enough results to keep the wolves from the door. And I think they'll continue to do that until it gets to a point where it's maybe just too much for the owners and the fans are maybe...
But what will that point be?
I saw him do it before, you know, just when they're not playing well, beat Man City a couple of times. Were completely dominated last year by City and beat them in the cup and in the league. Just kept the wolves from the door for a little while. I think he'll do that just enough to appease the ownership, who I think don't want to make a big decision, and will only make it if it's a really, really bad situation.
No doubt about it, the game of the weekend in the Premier League was Manchester City against Liverpool. Mohamed Salah, of course, scoring one of the goals of the season, the second to give Liverpool the lead. City, of course, come back to equalise. Luis Garcia, is Mo Salah the best player in the world?
Well, you mean at the moment? You mean right now?
Yeah, I think
it is. At least... Let's don't call it the best player in the world. Let's call it the most determinant, the most decisive. I think he's proven that the numbers is improving at the moment. He's scoring every single weekend. He's scoring goals that are giving points to Liverpool. And I think he's changing a little bit the way he was playing 2-3 years ago. Because in the beginning, he used to get the ball on the wide area. He was trying to make those fantastic races. He's a quick player, long balls to him, get the ball, try to be players 1v1. And now he's adapting a little bit. He realized that sometimes it's even better that the players have the ball and he received the ball in those important positions, in those pockets, inside the box where if he's touched, it's a penalty. The defenders respect him. So now when he's around the box, he's trying to combine a little bit. He's doing a great job with Fabinho sometimes, with Firmino, with Jota. And when he gets the ball inside the box or near the box, he's so dangerous. We've seen it so many times. We saw a lot of goals from him scoring. But at the moment, he's trying to use his speed, his power, and his talent near the box when he is more dangerous. So he's not anymore trying to make those long runs. So at the end, he's fresh when he's on the ball. And I think it's something that he's using very well right now. And I have to say, I'm not sure if calling him the best player in the world, but definitely the most determined.
Best player in the world, Shaq?
I think it's a good week to say that with Bayern, PSG and Real Madrid all losing. The truth is, it's the margins are very thin. At that level of the game right now, the margins are thin, with Messi still trying to settle in at PSG, with Ronaldo not hitting his old heights at Man U just yet. But right now, he's in that conversation. And whichever way you shake it up, whichever way it comes out, is only a little bit between who you have as first, second, third, and fourth, let's call it.
Can I throw some water on this?
Sure.
I'm not 100% sure, but I was just trying to check there.
Okay.
But they're going to lose him in January.
For the African Cup of Nations?
Yep.
Oh.
That's...
It's only two Premier League matches.
And Mane,
it's
two.
Not too bad.
Like,
it's not the end.
It's only two.
It's only two.
That might be the difference.
There you are, your water.
Well, there's some water. It's only trickling out. It's not quite the full... But it's not just that. It's not just if you missed a couple of Premier League games. It's the fact that you've gone away and you've played all these games.
Sure.
And it's the injuries and all the other things that go with it.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is, it's not ideal for Liverpool, of course. And not the only club in the Premier League and others, but he will be going... And I just checked that quickly on my phone. I was quite happy with myself.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, pat yourself on the back.
Somebody will probably tweet and say, Egypt are not there.
No, it's just good doing research while the show is going on. You could have done that
before,
maybe.
Well, that's amazing. Well, I didn't know we were going to talk about Mo Salah.
Well, you could have guessed. What else are we going to be talking about?
Well, I talked about him yesterday.
Shaka, I think you're the only person that I've seen who thought that James Milner didn't deserve that second yellow. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, right. When did you see that? That was... Goodness me. Let me tell you, there is one person on the planet who didn't think that was a booking. And unfortunately, he had the whistle and was standing in the middle of the park. One person.
Do you know, I was desperate last night when we came on the show. I was absolutely dying for Nicol to have been going... I didn't think it was a yellow.
Oh, yeah, I know. Even he.
But I was like, I said, I hope he says that's not a yellow.
Yeah.
And we could spend the whole half hour or whatever it is tearing him to shreds.
Hey, Luis, it's that Anfield factor.
Yes.
We can call it many different ways. The referee tried to understand the situation. He knows that he's got the yellow. It's a free kick in the middle of the field. So he's trying to pass. He left the ball. Yeah, you can go different ways. I think it's a yellow card as well, yeah. But at the end, you have to manage this kind of situation. I think the referees have been told to be very careful to don't leave a team with 10 men. And sometimes when you have to balance that in just a few seconds that you have to make the decisions, you can get it wrong. VAR cannot get involved because if it's not a red card. So at the end, you can have these kind of mistakes. And, well, I think it was the wrong call.
Liverpool ambassador, yeah. Luis Garcia.
Did somebody tell you that in your ear? Mm-hmm.
Tell me what?
He's only missing two Premier League games.
No, there's no way you knew that. I knew it.
No way.
No, I knew it. I did the research.
No way.
You go back to that. That was like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, but I know, but I'm just wondering. I was sitting there when Lewis was talking. I'm like, how the hell did he know it was only two
Okay,
Premier
away, from, away, away from all conversations. For some reason, our producer wants to talk about Daniel James and the Leeds game.
Yeah, he sent a video.
I know, yeah.
You know how many emails he sent today?
I know.
Every time I got a little notification, I went to
We're recording
again.
Later. This penalty wasn't given. Should it have been?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, there's one angle that's not very clear, and then there's another one.
It's the second one, isn't it? The one that's coming up.
The one that's coming up.
Yeah, there you go.
The one that's coming up here.
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes.
Yes?
Well, you are entitled to put your arm out.
Oh, yeah? OK. Penalty, right. Is our producer happy now we've done that?
Every time I got a notification on my phone.
Oh, apparently Frank has a weird look on his face. We're pursuing with Daniel James. Go on, Frank.
No. I completely agree. I think it's a clear penalty for me, like it was a penalty against Milner yesterday, because I didn't have a word on that. And that was
I was
really amazed.
Your voice, with, Frank.
Well, you never got a word on it, Frank, because it wasn't a penalty. You mean a second yellow?
Oh, right. Okay. Let's remind you that extra time is always
second
available
yellow,
over
but a penalty on Milner.
On our YouTube. Save your voice, Frank.
That's just what it was like at training.
It's over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to check it out. Frank will be back for extra time.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Both Barcelona and Real Madrid losing then this weekend in La Liga. Real Madrid remain top of the table, level on points now with Atleti and Real Sociedad. Barcelona, meanwhile, down in ninth. Luis Garcia, I thought it was telling that Gerard Piqué said after the game they could have played for 3 hours and still not scored.
Yes, and I totally agree with it. I was watching. We were commentating the game, and definitely it looked like it doesn't matter what we're trying to do. There was no way that they could make, because not even clear chances. I mean, you could see the Barcelona try, had the ball, but Atletico de Madrid was comfortable just waiting for the moment. The plan of Simeone was working in the perfect way. It looked like Barcelona, not that it's losing their philosophy or the way of Barcelona playing, because it's trying to play with the ball, but at a certain point they look out of position. I either like when Koeman start talking about players, pointing players, because when you make names or mention names, you start pointing players, talking about Nico at certain moments. Yeah, of course, you can make mistakes. Barcelona is doing it at the back because sometimes they don't know what to do. If they go to press higher, they will stay waiting, and Atletico Madrid was waiting for the chance. They are used to play this way. We wait at the back, we regain the ball in certain position. We got quick players up front, like Lemar, Suarez in between the lines, Joao Felix, that know exactly how to play with the tempo. And at the end, we are going to have and create chances. And that's the way it happens during the game. So it's a pity. It's very sad and frustrating to see this Barcelona, but it's a moment of transition, and we have to try to understand if we want to see a better Barcelona. Of course, it's not the way that supporters are seeing in this way.
Luis, what I thought was interesting, Memphis Depay speaking to Sid after the game, saying, look, it's impossible to ignore all the noise going on around the manager. How does that affect a player's dedication to a coach when you know pretty much he's on his way out?
I think it's not only about the surrounding, it's about how you feel into the game. Because when you are being told, listen, this is the plan that we are going to do, and you see that it's not working, and you go the next weekend and you try to do what you've been told and it's not working again. Yeah, and then the surrounding, the people talking about why is this not working, why the players are not ready, why they're not pushing, and then you start feeling a little bit from the inside. Because even though we saw some arguments between Busquets and Piqué saying, listen, why we are not doing this? Why you're not tracking back? Or why is not someone tracking back this player? So at the end, you can see that the message that Ronald Koeman is trying to send to the players is not arriving, because there is a lot of misunderstanding, misjudgments at the back, in the middle of the field, players not tracking back or not following the player who they need to follow. So at the end, of course, it matters. And for the players that they are inside the dressing room, when things are not working, they start feeling that everybody's pointing at them. And sometimes it's not the what is really happening. Everybody has something to be blamed.
Players know when it's not working. Of course they do, because players generally are not stupid in a football parlance. But anything surrounding the manager being used to talk about performance is just an excuse.
Right.
Wim Jansen, the players at Celtic when I was there knew that Wim Jansen, the much respected coach, was leaving at the end of the season, probably 2 or 3 months before, because there was a rift between him and the board. And we knew. And so the players put it to one side and went on and won the league in the last day of the season.
Yeah, but you're winning. Isn't that different? If you're winning, you've got that momentum going, then that's fine. But if you've got a manager in charge that you know the board don't want, that hasn't got much control, hasn't got
a winning
record.
He's got control of who he picks and the team's tactics. So, and he's got control of the training and all the rest of it. And so any noise around whether the board like him or not is superficial to the performances on the field. Players will use anything they can hit you with as an excuse.
Right.
And whilst it's not... Look, what they have here is a guy who shouldn't be managing Barcelona. It's as simple as that. And yes, it's a transitional period, as Lewis said. Yes, there's some of the big stars have gone. Yes, there's financial problems. But you're telling me some of the performances we've seen from Barcelona with these players against some of the teams like Granada, like Cadiz, like the game against Bayern Munich, who are better, like the game against Benfica. You're telling me those performances, even with these players, are acceptable? Right. I'm sorry, they're not. They're not. And with a proper coach in there, like, say, for example, and there's not many around, a Roberto Martinez from Belgium could go in there and organise that team tactically and play a style of football that Barcelona would be kind of accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think get results. Ronald Koeman's just got his head in a big bucket here.
Yeah.
He doesn't really know what he's doing. He doesn't really know his squad, and he doesn't know how to get the best out of what he's got, particularly these young players. And so, as I said before, it's down to money, but he's a dead man walking.
Jules, what has Ronald Koeman done to hurt you?
It just makes me sad to see Barcelona in that state, and I blame him as well. He's not the only one to blame, of course, and we're not going to go back to Bartomeu and the way the club has dealt with everything and the money and the wage bill and all of that. But I agree with Craig. He's just not good enough to be sat on that bench. And even when he sat in the stands, which was the case against Atletico because he was suspended, even while he was sending his assistant on the bench, they could not even understand it. I mean, you look, you watch the camera that is on them the whole game, and they go like, they have no idea. I mean, the guy is clueless. Ronald Koeman is clueless. And I even said his name. I didn't want to say his name anymore.
Wow, Jules.
So he's not appearing on the Gab and Jules podcast.
I know, it's
anytime soon.
It's Jules' birthday today as well.
Is it?
It's so no het up about it all. My goodness, Jules. Congratulations. is it 41, Jules? I remember we were 40 last year. Am I 41?
It is.
And you're spending the evening with us.
I don't look it.
None of us are getting any younger.
Right, thanks, Craig. Yep, good.
I know, you're my favourite.
Meanwhile, let's give Atleti some love, shall we, Lewis? In particular, Luis Suarez. How much would he have enjoyed scoring this goal?
Oh, I cannot tell you how much. I think probably he's been dreaming about having this chance for the past 3-4 months since he left there. Well, realized that he was going to play against the coach that allowed him to go to Barcelona, from Barcelona to Atletico Madrid. I think it's a perfect moment for him. He enjoyed it so much. He got so much time to think about this moment, and well, there you go. That's a celebration that even though he said, no, it's not for you, I think he got a few laughs after it and showed that. Yeah, no, it's not for you. And did like this, something like that. So, but
Do you know the story, Craig, of that phone call?
Yeah, I read some about it.
So basically, obviously, Ronald Koeman phoned him when he arrived, saying, "We don't need you. You can go." And then he was asked about that celebration, and he goes, "Oh no, it had nothing to do with Ronald Koeman. It was just to tell everybody that I'm still on the same phone number."
Yeah, I saw that. Just let everybody know I've still got the same number. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he should have just lifted his top up and said, "Stuff you, Koeman."
Yes.
Do you know what was quite interesting though with that finish for me? I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but I'm going to Timo Werner. Just to talk about the finish and how, I think it was Sid that asked him how he took long.
Yeah.
And I think that's a classic case of a real quality striker that he's been for years. That we've talked about Werner quite a lot in this show at Chelsea and how he gets into a lot of these positions and he panics and he rushes it. And it's all very 100 mile an hour. In contrast, look at this. How he waits and he waits and he makes sure he's got his balance right. And he'll make sure that he gets the keeper out. He understands where everybody is. This is where most people would have shot here.
Right.
Right, but he doesn't. And that's the difference between people that are going to bag you 25, 30, 35 goals a season than somebody that's going to look as if their laces are tied together. And Luis Suarez has been doing this for a decade plus around several countries, including Holland, England and Spain. And the big question at the start of the season was, well, Atleti, can Luis Suarez do it again?
Yep.
Well, he's looking, for me, trim enough, and he's certainly looking as if he's got a point to prove once again, which is great for Atleti.
Yeah, there's been some dodgy performances from Atleti so far this season, but they remain, don't they, level on points with Real Madrid at the top of the table. What a rubbish week it was for Madrid, of course, that humiliation against Sheriff midweek in the Champions League and then losing 2-1 against Espanyol.
Is this long statement day today?
His is the statement, not quite as long as Kylian Mbappe's. I think the plan was quite clear. I'm not here to explain it, but I agree the team looked disorganised. We didn't have the right positioning with the ball. We have to fix it. I've spoken to the players and they agree. I thought that Alaba could help in attack. We didn't have good balance on that side, but that wasn't his fault. I told him to push up and the midfielder had to cover, but that didn't happen. Defensively, Luis, I thought Real Madrid were an absolute shambles yesterday.
Yeah, midfield and at the back in defence, they were already... We've seen him quite a few times for this Real Madrid because it's not the first game that they struggle to get a good result. But the weekend, they didn't have enough time to come back. They had a chance to score one goal from the best player on the field, that it was Karim Benzema for Real Madrid. But it's true that they were, again, losing the position in many places into the field. He brought Camavinga in the center to try to be the holding midfielder, to try to bring the ball forward with Kroos and Modric. Kroos, you can see that it's still not fit 100%. That when he's on the ball, of course, but they cannot track back. Modric, of course, is a player that we all know when he's on the ball. Again, he can do magic, but you cannot ask him to be running for 90 minutes anymore. And at the end, you're playing against a team that is waiting for that, to allow him to get the ball, to make quick transitions going forward. And after 10, 15 minutes at Real Madrid in the first half, we're doing well. We were pressing higher, trying to regain the ball closer with Benitez, with Benzema. It was all done. It was all done. They stopped running. They stopped trying to regain the ball. And then Real Espanyol saw their chance. And they scored two fantastic goals. One in a counter-attack that it was just beautiful. And that's the way this Real Madrid is at the moment. If they don't put intensity here in La Liga, there is not anymore those 4-0, 5-0 that they had 5-10 years ago. Now the league is very competitive. It's very equal. And at the moment, if you don't run, it doesn't matter if you got more quality. It's going to be very difficult for any team to win the 3 points.
Luis and Jules, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your birthday, Jules. The next La Liga match for Real Madrid, it's El Clásico against Barcelona at the Camp Nou. Of course, it's a match you can see live on ESPN Plus, October 24th. Coverage starts at 10 a.m.
Yeah, you're going. We know you're going.
I didn't, but don't start. It's too early for you to start being moody about that. Meanwhile, I tell you what, we're in the semi-final stages of the Nations League. Brilliant games coming up. Wednesday, Italy against Spain. That's at 2:30 Eastern on ESPN2. And 24 hours later, Belgium against France. A couple of crackers for you. Ian Dark and Stuart Robertson will be taking you through those games. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meanwhile, Portland Timbers taking on Inter Miami. Miami just turning things around of late, haven't they? 0-0 though, 7 minutes to go in the game. He's got it, making it 1-0 to Portland.
Yeah, he's just, defender gets caught under the flight of the ball, and it's quite a simple header in the end, really.
Now, Inter Miami thought they'd got the equaliser with 4 minutes to play. You can see the cross is played in. Carranza with a header, however, the push here...
Yeah, there's a couple of infringements there. There's one just before the push, and then there's the push itself, so this is crystal clear for me.
Phil Neville furious after the game.
I think we'll cut straight to the chase. I thought we were absolutely robbed. Robbed from a poor refereeing decision. There's too many times I sit here and think, you know, I try and give the benefit of the doubt, but I don't know what these referees are doing during the week, I've got to say. Clearly a goal by Julian Carranza. Like I say, I thought that the team, for their efforts in the last two games, accepted the decision on Wednesday night, even though it could have gone the other way. I accepted it. I'm not accepting that today. I'm not accepting that because of the efforts of the team. I'm not accepting that because this is a professional league that's one of the toughest in the league to win, and we've got officials that are making such poor decisions like that. And ultimately, I've got to fight and stand up for my team and for my football club. Ultimately, we were robbed of points tonight because of a poor referee decision that isn't just a one-off. I'm seeing it time and time again. I'm frustrated, a little bit emotional, I'm sure. I've seen it three or four times, maybe five or six times, and not once did I think it was a foul. We spend probably millions of pounds on VAR to check decisions like that, and I don't know what they're thinking of not giving the foul. So ultimately, my thoughts on the game are totally clouded by what was probably the worst decision that we've had this season. And we've had some bad ones, and I've sat here and tried to defend referees, and I know Howard Webb really well, and I've got a lot of respect for Howard Webb, but I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing with these officials at this moment in time in terms of making poor decisions like that, and then they're reviewing them and not overturning them. And like I say, I can only talk the truth.
Yeah, fine on the way, I imagine, for Mr. Neville. For Inter Miami, they currently sit on 32 points, then they in 11th, 8 points adrift of Montreal, who sit in that all-important seventh spot. A lot more reaction, of course, to what happened this weekend in MLS on the latest edition of Football Americas. Plus, the boys will be looking ahead to the World Cup qualifiers for the US, including the US against Jamaica. It's a game that you can see live, the men in action, at 7:30 Eastern on ESPN2. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show.
Wasn't it?
Sorry?
It was a push.
I think so.
The angles we've got, it was a push.
It did look like a push. It did look like a foul.
Phil, that flight across the Atlantic, he must have forgot what a push looked like.
Oh, well, there we go. Thank you very much to Craig. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Craig with me in the studio. Shaka says, Frank, we're a little concerned about your lack of voice. What's going on?
Thank you very much first, but I was on stage, you know, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and I guess I lost a little bit my voice, and I'm a little bit tired as well, so I guess it doesn't help, but it's going to be okay. You know, next time I'm going to be on... ESPN FC, I'm going to be good. Don't worry. I'm okay.
Oh, wow. So is he forfeiting his pay for today? Is that what we're hearing?
Yeah. Do what I used to do, Frank. Pull the wire out.
That's it. For Craig, how do you think Zidane would fare as a United manager, given that he has zero experience both playing and managing within the Premier League?
I don't really think that's a huge problem.
Mm.
To be honest with you, good managers are just good managers, and they travel.
Yeah.
Well, one thing's for sure, he has a much better CV than the current manager that's in there, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting he's the greatest manager out there, but he certainly has a much better CV. Frank knows him, I think English is a problem.
Yes.
The language might be a problem, so he'd have to go over that barrier or learn fast. But my experience for some of these guys that come in from abroad, when I was at Chelsea, they learned very fast.
What would you choose, the French national team or Manchester United, if that choice was that simple?
Oh, the French national team.
Yeah? Yeah. Why?
Chance to manage your country with all these. And it's, even though France went out of the Euros and the manner in which they did, it's still a very good crop of players.
Frank, what do you think he would choose, given the option?
Oh, definitely definitely the French national team. Because I'm not sure that he wants to go to England, he wants to move from Madrid, and he can still be the national team coach and live in Spain. So, and I think it would be the case the day he will decide to go for the national team.
Madrid, rain-soaked Manchester. Madrid, rain-soaked Manchester. Fish and chips, tapas.
I lived in both.
Yeah, but you don't count.
What do you mean? I count.
You're just. I'm trying to find the right word here.
Is Liverpool?
It comes after culture.
Is Liverpool culture vulture? That's where I am. Shaka, is Liverpool against Manchester City the biggest fixture in the world right now?
Yes, I guess so. I'm thinking. Barcelona, Real Madrid, given Marseille's struggles, doesn't ring as highly. Dortmund, Bayern, similarly. I think right now, yes. Those are two of the best footballing teams in European and world football. And as a result, the biggest fixture.
They're the best teams. Not the best teams. They're two of the best teams, but there is no doubt the Clásico.
Yes. Still,
no, I know there's no Ronaldo and I know there's no Messi. And this is not some corporate spiel. But it is.
October 24th, ESPN Plus.
Yeah. Check the ink in that contract, will you? I still believe, because I played in the Old Firm, which is huge, but it's not. I just think Clásico, even without those pair that I mentioned, still travels globally.
Right, still has that appeal.
Juggernauts. But the quality of the teams at the moment isn't where you want to be.
Yeah. But I suppose take history away and just if you could have one team against another, Frank, which would you pick together to watch just as a football fan?
Well, the Liverpool-Manchester City this season is absolutely perfect because they are two fantastic teams. I want to add Chelsea, the Chelsea-Manchester City. Even if Chelsea had a non-game, it was a very interesting game. But I want to go to maybe Marseille, Paris Saint-Germain for maybe the first time for like 10 years at least, where it could be very interesting to see the trio playing in Marseille, where the atmosphere is going to be crazy. Marseille plays quite well. They're not the contender because I guess Paris Saint-Germain is going to easily win the Ligue 1. But it can be a good fight at the Stade Vélodrome with 65,000 crazy people. That is going to has to be followed.
Why would Manchester City sign Grealish for such a large fee if all they want him to do is dribble at defenders in slow motion and pace it backwards to a teammate, Shaka?
Listen, right now, there's no question Grealish isn't living up to his price tag. But I still think he brings certain qualities. And that left side, Raheem Sterling seems to be a little bit out of favor and his contract is winding down in the next couple of seasons. And it'll take time. It took time for Riyad Mahrez to figure out exactly what was needed of him. And I think Grealish is the same. I never really bought into the assumption that Grealish would come straight in, despite the price tag, be an automatic starter and a game changer for City. That'll take some time.
For Craig, with the way City have adapted tactically to not having a central striker, do you think actually buying Kane would, as a result, weaken their current midfield strength?
What has Kane got to do with the midfield strength?
Right.
I would say. they play with three in the middle and kind of three up front with a false number nine. It was Grealish at the weekend, which was strange, and Foden on the left. But
what about the actual style of play? How much would that change things if you had an out-and-out striker like Harry Kane?
No, it wouldn't change it a lot because let's not forget the success they had two years ago or whatever it was when Aguero was fit.
Mm-hmm.
And Aguero's not somebody you would consider a passer. Like, you know, Aguero's a guy that he was never the greatest link-up player, never the greatest at holding the ball up. But his attributes were in and around the penalty area. But he still, they still managed to integrate him within this wonderful attacking team. So it can be done. Plus, you get the goals.
Yep.
It just takes the pressure off the midfielders and the attacking wide players, or whatever you want to call them. So I don't quite understand how it would weaken their midfield. I don't think it would.
Frank, why do French players let loose every international break and talk so freely about transfer rumours? I don't feel it's just the French. I feel like everybody in international breaks go home and just kind of spill the beans on everything.
That's the thing, and it happened to me as well. You know, when you go back to France and you think that nobody's going to listen to what you're going to say in England, for example, and I made some mistakes about that. So I guess, yeah, that's what it is. You feel confident because you can go back and talk in your native language, and you maybe go a little bit deeper in your explanation that you should do, and maybe explain too much. That's, I think, what happens to many French international players who go back for, or you just go back to France.
Robbie Musto tells the story of, was it Ravinelli that he played for? With Middlesbrough, just ahead of the FA Cup final. He went back for international break, slagged the whole of the team off, saying Middlesbrough are terrible, they're horrible, then came back, just thinking that somehow the news wouldn't travel across the ocean to England.
But he was right.
Yeah, so then what? And he told Mateo scored after 14 seconds.
And he told me that because when we were at Derby together, he told me it was like they were training on, like, I won't tell you what you call it, but it was like a public park where people walk. He says, Craig, it's incredible. People walking the dogs and all that. And said, this is perfect. And don't forget, he came from like Juventus.
Yes.
And with that Lippi team, with that magnificent professionalism in the gym 3 hours before. And they were playing. He says, the first thing Big Gordon McQueen did, Big Gordon, bless him, he picked Ravinelli up from the hotel, took him to the local pub just outside Middlesbrough and introduced him to pints of beer and darts. He's never thrown a dart in his life. He's like... And he was like, this is incredible.
Old school. Old school stuff. Shaka, you played with enough internationals. Did anyone go away, slag off the team and then come back?
No, we knew better. We knew better than that. I understand exactly what Frank is saying. You go back home, you're a couple of trusted journalists, and you say some things that maybe you shouldn't, and next thing you know, it ends up in the press. But I guess we're talking about Kylian Mbappe here, Sydney this week. He doesn't get the excuse that, well, you go back home and speak in your native language and say too much. He doesn't get that. It's just kind of silly on his part, I find.
What was the spree like when he came back, Shaq? He must have spilled the beans everywhere when he went and played in South America.
Oh, God. Listen, the thing is, everybody knew Asprey was a little bit nuts. So you just kind of took it at, well, yeah, that's Tino, and I just moved on. I mean, he was a law unto himself regardless.
Question for all three. At what age did you realise you truly had the talent and potential to reach the professional level?
24. Are you serious?
Yeah, that's a good question,
do you know what?
Was there a light bulb moment? You thought, wow.
I'll tell you what, I'll be honest with you. The boys might all be different. But it's a building process. I don't think you ever get there until you get there.
Right.
Does that make sense? Because... Say, for example, my scenario was I left home in Scotland when I was 16, went to London. At that point, I was doubting myself.
Sure.
So until you get through the two-year apprenticeship, you doubt whether you're going to be get offered a professional contract. Then you get offered the professional contract. Then you doubt whether you're going to be able to make it to the first team. Because until you actually do it, because as a young kid for me, and I was looking at all these other players like Kerry Dixon and Mickey Hazard and Graham Roberts and all these guys at Chelsea at the time, and I thought, can I be that guy?
Right.
And I doubted myself, and so I'm only talking about my scenario. Until I'd actually started playing in the first team regular, only and only then did I realise that I could do it. But for long times I doubted myself when I was between the ages of 16 and sort of 20. Big time.
Preceding that though, before you made that move to Chelsea, were you just head and shoulders above everybody else you were playing with at that level in Scotland?
There's a lot of
like,
good,
was it like,
well, I played for the Scottish schoolboys and stuff, so I made it through a lot of these, but there was a lot of good guys. But yeah, I think I always knew that I always knew I could go to different clubs. I never doubted I was going to get an apprenticeship.
Okay, it was just
never, because I had plenty of offers. But I always doubted whether I could get to the level of playing with Frank and that at the guys, because when you're 16 and 17, some guys might say, but I saw loads of guys, actually, kids that were super cocky and confident and really good.
Right.
And never played, never made it. Maybe they were too cocky.
I see.
Or maybe they just didn't.
Frank, we know you have a problem with humility, so you can't have had a problem like that.
Yes, I had, because, you know, I joined the Academy of Toulon. I was 16 and a half, and 2 years later, they sacked me, saying that I wasn't good enough. Maybe it was the case. I was playing at the midfield. As a midfield, I was competing with David Ginola, the same position. And he was already, for me, a grown-up, where I was still a kid. I didn't get, I think, the specificity of being a football player. And I was sacked, and it took me 2 other years to join and go back to the Ligue 1. And as soon as I started, and I, at that time, went down to the defense and started to play as a sweeper, I immediately felt that I was ready to step up and to be good enough to embrace that career. So I never had any doubts as after my maybe second or third game, where I felt that I could improve, of course, but I would be okay to have a decent career.
Just before Xhaka tells us how it was when he failed to be a striker that he turned into a goalkeeper.
Moved his goalkeeper.
Just to give you an example. A lot of the guys in the youth team with me all went on to have successful careers in the Premier League. Graham Stewart at Everton, Eddie Newton, Frank Sinclair, Nathan Blake at Blackburn and Wales, the Jason Koundé at Tottenham, David Lee, the list goes on. But a lot of those guys, some of them were older, but some of those guys, Damien Mathieu and one or two other guys, all made the first team debuts before me.
Okay.
And I was like, oh. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But Damien, for example, who is coaching the kids now, I think, I believe at Chelsea, after about 2021, whatever it was, went and played lower league football. He never quite went again.
Yeah.
But they all made their debut before me. So that puts that seed of doubt in your mind.
That,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, that period from when you're 16 that period when you're 16 to 18.
Yep.
That must be so intense. Because you're all battling, yeah?
Shall I get the handkerchiefs out?
No,
as
I'm
well?
just
shall I get the tissues?
Because we always think, right, playing football for a living, that has got to be the greatest dream. We all want to do that. Yep. Yet during that period, you're basically playing for your life almost every day.
And you're living. So, I mean, it's different now. Just life's just different. But, you know, you've no cell phones, you've nothing like that.
Sure.
It's not a lot of money flying around. 87 when I went to Chelsea. You're away from home and you're still doing all these things.
Yeah.
You're put in with a family who I was, an hour and a half from the training ground, an hour from Stamford Bridge, and you can't drive. And plus, you go in the morning, you do all the jobs for the pros, and then you train, then you come back in, you do all your jobs again, clean the boots, clean the bathrooms, then you go back to Stamford Bridge as it was at the time, you get all the kit ready for the next day's training. And only then can you go home. And then you've, on top of that, you've got to learn to be a professional.
Sure.
So it's a toughening up. They don't do that anymore. The youngsters are treated differently. They're not allowed to do all these jobs anymore. It's seen as against their working whatever. But back in the day, you know, even for my era and, you know, the Beckham era and the Neville era and the Ray Parler and all these guys, they all had to do this at their respective clubs. And I believe it gives you an inner strength to not just be handed a silver spoon and say, there's your nice apartment, there's your nice car, see you in the morning at training, and all you have to do is work on your technique. There was so many other facets to our job that was so much fun looking back now, but at the time it was hard. And I saw a lot of guys be let go with tears. You know, boys, there was a lot of, when I was at Chelsea in the apprenticeship, there was a lot of guys from London. There was a lot of guys from Ireland, Wales and Scotland. There was nobody from Spain and Italy and all that, and that happens now. There was a lot of guys from those countries that I mentioned, and they were giving their butt to try and be this professional, and almost 90% of them were told, and they were good players,
right,
to get to that level, and they were told no, and most of them went back with their tails between their legs to their own country, and that hammer blow saw most of them never play above sort of local level again. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough,
yeah,
to be
course,
told.
Because you're always...
You spent 2 years away from home and you, yeah, fought and you battled.
You're going to make it.
When you walk into the coach's room, you're like that. No, I'm sorry, we're letting you go. It's 2 years, yeah, down the drain.
It.
It's not easy, but listen, what is at the other end if you do make it?
Yeah.
Is,
and then you retire, yeah, and get to work with me. What a lovely,
and then
lovely thing.
You move to America and the end.
Shaka, you took obviously a slightly different route because you went to college first, mm-hmm, before then going into professional football.
He never went to college.
He did. He went to Howard.
Listen, if brains were dynamite, he couldn't blow the top of his head off.
He's our NASA boy, isn't he, Shaq?
NASA?
I'm not sure how to answer that, but yes, Dan, I did go to college. I graduated engineering, and I had options and was considering going back to do my master's in engineering. And one of my mentors said, you know, give football a shot. If it doesn't work out, that's fine. You come back to engineering. You can always do that, but just give it one go. When I first moved over to England, I was on trial at Reading. I was actually sitting in at classes, engineering classes at Reading University. I was looking in job centers for how much engineers got paid, because I wasn't sure. And until it was Kevin Dillon, I was on trial for a couple of months. Kevin Dillon, one of the senior players, said to me, you know, don't worry, you know, Mark likes you. I think they'll make you an offer. That I thought I was even going to get a contract. That contract came, I signed for 2 years. At the end of the first year, I hated it. I hated everything about it. And I wanted to quit. I went back to Trinidad, spoke with my dad about it, and he's like, listen, you signed a 2-year deal, give it a go. If this last year doesn't work out, well then, you know, then you quit. But you don't walk out on a signed agreement. And that season I went back, I played every game, we got promoted, and that was the first time 2 years into being a professional that I felt I could make it, and I felt like I could enjoy being a professional footballer.
What did you hate?
Hold on, Shaq, hold on.
Dan. I've got to ask a nice question.
1 second, Shaq. I've got our boss is in our ear. Hold on, it's breaking up. He's mentioning something about job centres. Tell him to go back to the job centre.
They don't exist anymore, do they, job centres?
Shut up.
You told your story. I want to hear
Shaq's story. No, but do you know why he never did the engineering?
Why not?
Not enough holidays.
Why not? Yes, that's true. Shaq, what was it about that first year that you didn't like?
It was just tough, you know, as Craig says. So, you know, you leave your family, you leave your loved ones, you don't have regular contact because, you know, we don't have phones and, you know, mobile phones and everything of the sort. And you're just away from everything. And I'm in the middle of Berkshire. I don't know anybody around. Nobody's telling me whether I'm, you know, no... It's just a really tough adjustment, and as a young man on my own, I really struggled to settle down.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, homesick for 6 months, holy smokes, bad. And then after that, I was fine, but I was desperate for 6 months.
Right.
You know, remember those red telephone boxes?
Yeah, of course. Yes, of course I remember the red telephone.
Well, nobody has them now. Nobody even has landlines. What? The red telephone kiosks in London.
They're a bit bigger than that.
Yeah, well, I was a little thinner then, but that size. I used to go there like on a Friday night or whatever it was, and I'd have all these coins, and I used to get a phone to my girlfriend at the time and be slotting these coins in, talking to her. And I looked around once, and there was about eight people all queued up waiting.
Right.
Like, because nobody had it. And
yes,
I'm on the phone to her.
Right.
And then we used to communicate letters.
Oh, is this your wife now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, hold on, 7:10? Not sure. Things change quickly in this business. She used to write to me saying, I'm breaking up with you. And then I write back to her, and she'd get it 2 weeks later. No, I'm breaking up with you.
Oh my God. So not much has changed. 30 years.
35 years later, there's just no letter. It's amazing how things change.
Yeah.
I love those days with all those guys doing all those jobs.
Right.
It was fun. Yeah. It was hard. But it made, I tell you what it did. It made you want to be a professional.
Right.
To do all the other stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But it must have broken a lot of people as well. A lot of people, like, that's a tough environment to thrive.
Yeah, there was a few guys actually.
That's got to be tricky. Like, I'd cry and go back home. I don't think I'd like it.
So basically, I said just before I was going to London. So I went to London to Arsenal and Chelsea, and I had an offer to go to both. For whatever reason, I went to Chelsea. And about a month, because you couldn't leave, you couldn't go to these clubs until you were 16.
Okay.
Unless you lived in the area.
Right.
You're not allowed to. So as soon as I, a month before my 16th birthday, I said to my parents, I'm not so brave now.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to stay here right. and sign for a Scottish club. And my old man went, get out. You're going, you big, right. blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so I end up, next thing I know, I'm on a flight, I'm getting picked up, and I'm in a house with family and
wow.
all that. Brilliant, brilliant experience looking back now.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was like a big baby.
Of course, yeah, you're 16, you're young.
And I had a girlfriend.
Oh, yes, you had a girlfriend, now your wife for the moment.
Hey.
What's that?
Never a bad word.
What's that, between the two of you?
Never a bad word.
On that bombshell, Frank, you can go to bed now, mate. What's it, 1 o'clock in France?
What are you laughing at, Shaq?
Don't worry about the last one. We won't do the last question. Everyone's on the side.
10 past 1, that's all right. That's all right.
Good stuff. Thank you very much, boys. We will be back tomorrow for more as attention, of course, turned to internationals.